Welcome to First Bite, brought to you by Pride of Detroit. PrideofDetroit.com, everything you need to know about the Detroit Lions of the NFL of the United States. PrideofDetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter, Pride of Detroit on Facebook. I'm starting to say it with a W, so I'm just going to pass it over to my man, Ryan Matthews. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing great, Chris. You did a fine job. Don't worry about your W's.
I won't worry about my W's as long as the Lions keep racking W's.
That's right. That worked nicely. Seven of them. Count them.
Heyo. This is our preview podcast. This is what we do here. We do this, bring this to you every Friday, bring you everything you need to know about the team the Detroit Lions will be playing on Sunday. You can find me on Twitter at Detroit Southern, where you can find all my musings about Korea, Japan, Marx, sports, football, the Pistons. And Ryan over on Ryan_POD, where he will be talking about mostly the sports and, pizza, wings.
Oh, come on. Fantasy football.
Fantasy football. Axe, absolutely.
Playoffs are right around the corner. Right around the corner.
They are. And we have a guest here with us, Brian Pavick from Canal Street Chronicles. Hello, Brian.
How you guys doing today?
We're doing aight. Doing aight here. Just kind of easing in. Brian writes over at Canal Street Chronicles, the SB Nation site for everything you need about the New Orleans, the New Orleans Saints. And
absolutely.
They are actually, no, wait, the Lions are going to New Orleans. I like this.
They are.
Yep.
Didn't we go there
coming
last year?
Coming into the Superdome.
So why is it two away games with the Saints? Do we normally do that?
Just how the cookie crumbles. I don't know.
I guess. The Saints are 5-6 at the time of this recording, Brian. Still, however, that still means they're in the hunt, I guess. Like, this is a curious playoff picture with the NFC South, and I admit I haven't devoted too much brain power to that division. I know the Falcons are 7-4. You got the Buccaneers in between, like, and I'm just kind of looking through the schedule here. Is this kind of a make or break game for the Saints if they want to make the playoffs?
There really isn't a better word for it. They choked away games against the Broncos and the Panthers last few weeks, which would have then put them in a great position towards a playoff run. So now they pretty much need to win out.
Yeah, and you had two really close losses against the Raiders and Giants to start the season too. It's kind of a bit of a lot of lost opportunities that the Saints have had here to really kind of get into this.
They're
division.
Legitimately 8 plays away from probably being a 7 or 8 win team right now. It's been that close, which gives you hope for the future, but it's also heartbreaking in the present.
I think that has been that's kind of been the story of the Detroit Lions for many years past too, or just anyone in this league, because it is always on a razor's edge. And speaking of a little bit of heartbreak, we are going to start in the injury reports. Nothing really to report, Ryan, from the Detroit Lions angle. We are still waiting for Levy.
Just perpetually waiting for DeAndre Levy to come back.
Yeah, waiting for Godot, waiting for Levy.
Might be, might not. We'll see. Just got to keep waiting. Don't expect him to come back. I think you'll do better week to week if you just expect him to not come back, because then when he comes back, it'll be a nice little surprise, and it'll be, you know, a monumental upgrade to our linebacker position. So, other than that, no real injuries, right, Chris?
No, not really. I know Tahir Whitehead appeared on the injury report, so did Marvin Jones, but I know Marvin Jones has appeared on the report before with a couple of bang-ups, and I think actually so did Tahir Whitehead, so this is all just kind of maintenance at this point. I'm just thinking about inactives other than DeAndre Levy. And to be honest, I expect him to play, but I won't be disappointed if he doesn't. But I know people will be mad if he doesn't, because people are perpetually mad at Levy because apparently they don't like the idea of physics.
Yeah. And they also don't like the idea of signing a contract and then getting hurt like he planned on having that happen.
I saw some people who were like, you know, oh, I would never, I would, you know, if I got hurt doing work, I wouldn't be, you know, expecting to get paid constantly, like not doing the work. It's like, no, that's what workers' comp
is. That's a lie.
That's what workers' comp is.
Yeah, that's the biggest sham I've ever heard. I've actually been on.
That's what PTO is.
Right. I've been on PTO And I loved it. I was able to sit at home and watch WWE Network and get paid to do it. So,
of course you did.
Well, hold on. Earlier you said Razor's Edge, and then right after that you said Heartbreak, and I was immediately like Scott Hall and Shawn Michaels. Okay. But why'd you have to do that to me? The other thing too, I wanted to say with the Lions,
what an awesome ladder match. But continue.
Oh yes.
Oh no. Oh no. We're going to get in trouble.
This podcast is going to get derailed. And Brian, if you do something like that again, my boss is going to be very upset with me.
Super mad.
So, but in terms of, you know, maybe we're running into a couple of teams with the Lions and the Saints who have just kind of been on the opposite side of fortune. Maybe. I mean, I don't want to count. I don't want to chalk everything up to what the Lions have done so far this season to be luck. But, you know, Brian saying that the Saints are maybe 7 or 8 plays away from being a 7, possibly 8 win team. The Lions are, you know, a few plays away from being, you know, a 4-win team, a 5-win team. So they're very comparable teams. It's going to be a very interesting Sunday.
I was talking with Andrew Cotto about this, too. And Brian, maybe you can chime in on this, too. But I feel like a lot of this, too, has been a matter of how the NFL has legislated this game, like top to bottom, both in how you're able to sign players to how calls are made on the field about stuff like PI and everything else. This game has been pretty much legislated to make sure that the optimal outcome is basically a razor's edge in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think there's a degree of that. I think certainly the NFL wants more exciting games, but then there's also certain teams that are borderline dominant every year, regardless of free agent transactions. And I think a lot of that comes down to understanding both what your identity is. You know, the NFL is the ultimate team game. It has, you know, more variables, more complexity, and more just the dynamic geometry of the game itself. So talent evaluation and then building towards a group fit, not just picking up, hey, this player's good, that player's good, and really kind of playing fantasy football, I think is what separates the teams that are consistently effective and the teams that, you know, they go up and down. Then, of course, there's always the ultimate equalizer, which is injuries. You know, a guy gets hurt, it completely can change your team, one or two players. And, you know, in a physical, you know, gladiator type sport like football, injuries are always going to happen, which means that depth is of the utmost importance. And I think you can see that year in, year out. I'm kind of ignoring the landmine of exposing the absolutely pathetic job of officiating the NFL does on a week-to-week basis. Not having full-time referees, not having cameras along the sidelines, and basic things that other sports have. When baseball's beating you when it comes to officiating, you're doing it wrong.
Well, since you brought up injuries there, I think it's a great way to get back on track. Let's talk about the two key injuries right now. Obviously, recording on Thursday, you will get this probably, I'd say a few hours before maybe the Friday game status reports come out, and obviously players always upgraded, downgraded. But for the Saints, two red flags with running back Mark Ingram has not practiced either Wednesday or Thursday, and offensive tackle Taron Armstead has not practiced either Wednesday or Thursday. Ingram nursing a toe injury, Armstead listed with knee quad. Can you tell us, Brian, just kind of, I mean, what happens with either of them? I know the Saints have some depth, a little bit of depth at running back. I've seen Tim Hightower take snaps there, but obviously losing Ingram would be pretty big. And then I'd need you to fill me in on Taron Armstead.
Yeah, Mark Ingram is he's one of those players where he's kind of like the undisputed king of always being nicked up with something. So he's always on the report, and then when they change the reports, you know, taking out the probable tag, so now guys are always questionable unless they're for sure go. Or out, you know, things like that, you know, kind of impact how you interpret that. As far as I'm aware, they really kept Mark out as a precautionary measure. He's definitely going to be a major part of the game plan for this game, both for his pass protection as well as for his ability, you know, as a productive member of the number one offense in the NFL. So I don't think there's much of a chance of him being out for the game. He's especially with a toe injury, he's played and fought through those before. But that said, it is the NFL, and you never know. As far as Taron Armstead, he's actually, to me, he's actually a far bigger concern than Mark Ingram going out. The Saints, Sean Payton, Drew Brees have made players far less talented than Mark Ingram look like stars before, and they'll continue to do so. But if you can't keep your quarterback upright, you really can't do much at all. And when healthy, Terron Armstead is a top three left tackle in the NFL. And also, maybe even a larger impact, when Armstead plays at left tackle, last year's first-round pick, Andres Pete, moves over to left guard, which gives them Armstead, Pete, and Unger on the left-hand side, which is basically two Pro Bowl-level talents and an ascending player, which is much better than when you're filling in, you know, Pete moves over to left tackle and Senio Calamente has to move into left guard. That's a compromised line, and if I'm being honest, Ziggy Ansah scares the crap out of me, and he should for anyone going up against him. You know, he's one of those guys where he's got such incredible tools that on any given day, he can explode, you know, production wise. So if you can have a Pro Bowl, maybe even all pro level player at that spot, even if they're 80% of that player, that would be the preference always. So to me, for both teams, whether or not Terron Armstead is active for the game is a major swing point.
By the way, to recap a point here earlier, Ryan, I did just see a Dave Burkett report. Levy is not expected to play on Sunday. So you're right. Don't get your hopes up, kids.
I'm not disappointed because 3 minutes ago I was setting myself up to not be disappointed.
Yourself up for despair.
Setting myself up for non-disappointment. I totally agree with you, Brian. I really like Armstead, and it's not just because he's really highly rated in Madden. That entire Saints offensive line, now that they're all finally healthy, it's pretty darn good. It's pretty darn good, right?
Yeah, no, they are. Sorry, I didn't realize that was a question, but yeah, no, they're.
It wasn't.
They're very
good. It was
now.
A statement at first, but I wanted to let you know that it was my statement, and then you could answer it.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, I'm. I actually have a personal war against PFF. I kind of hate them, but.
Oh, us too. High five.
Yeah. Hey, high five.
They are very highly rated on there. I do firmly believe, and I can back it up with the film. Drew Brees and Sean Payton do a lot to make this line look better than it is, especially with the cadaver of Jari Evans there at right guard, because he's just not the player he used to be, which, you know, age gets everybody, so that's fine. But they've actually been surprisingly really solid this year. You know, they've gone through kind of a gauntlet of defenses through some of the last few weeks. You know, you played Carolina and Denver and Kansas City and Seattle. And that's kind of a murderer's row of defense. You know, that's a sequence where you would expect where if you had a bad line, your quarterback would get hurt. And that didn't happen. And then last week, you know, against St. Louis, who has the best defensive front in football, you hung 49 points on the number two scoring defense in the league. So I think the offensive line is definitely trending upwards. Terron Armstead being able to play is a huge, huge factor for that. But they've done a really good job of filling in for him when he's been out, because he's been in and out with the muscle issue that he's having in his upper leg all season. So it's something that worries me, but it's not something that has me in a panic, because they've, you know, obviously, you know, no disrespect to the Lions, but they've faced better fronts and survived. But, you know, it's still something that concerns you, because it's not like Detroit is bad.
All right, let's take a quick break there, because we're starting to get into our positional matchups. So we're going to take this break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about the matchups to matchups, which are always fun to figure out. So stick around. Welcome back here to First Bite, the preview podcast from Pride of Detroit. As always, subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, not on SoundCloud. We'd like to put it on SoundCloud, but extenuating factors mean that we cannot. But Stitcher, iTunes, I think we got in a few other things. But either way, you can look for Pride of Detroit Blog Talk Radio. It's where we put our stuff. Let's talk about some of these units going up here. And Brian, I know we started on offensive line of the Saints. Did you guys want to keep rolling that ball, or do you feel like we've got enough there, Ryan?
Well, the one thing that you did say that I thought was a little bit interesting was that you said that the Lions have probably played better offensive lines this season, and I'm not sure that they have. and I mean, of recent memory, I mean, the Lions have played Minnesota a couple of times. They've played Jacksonville. So just in terms of the, you know, the offensive lines that they've faced in the past couple of weeks, you know, in people's recent memory banks, they've been pretty bad. And I think that what the defense has been able to do over the past few games as a unit is they've been able to generate a lot more pressure. And I think that people are kind of setting themselves up for a little bit of a disappointment in terms of what the defense is going to be able to do kind of just as a whole. And especially when I say this, generating pressure and trying to get to Drew Brees, I think that's going to be a problem this week because the Saints offensive line, like you said, they're trending upwards. And if Armstead plays, they're going to be pretty good.
Let me just throw some Football Outsider numbers at you. They have them right now rated at the top for in their run blocking numbers they keep, and about six. Although, granted, that's just his adjusted sack rate, but still, that's still six. So the only one that's above them in that regard was Washington.
And that's, you know,
and you know of the teams the Lions have faced.
Okay, yeah, and you know the thing I get what you're saying, Brian, and I guess my question for you is, I understand how, you know, Sean Payton and Drew Brees, they can scheme to beat a defense to minimize the risk that they'll put Brees at by doing what? Like, how are they making the offensive line look better than they actually are?
Well, yeah, and just to clear it up real quick, I was actually referring to the Saints have faced, the offensive line has faced better defensive fronts than what, what they'll face against the Lions.
Yes, they have.
and that's not an insult to you guys because Denver and Carolina are terrifying.
None taken.
One of the ways to do that is, you know, you run a lot of chips. You run high end or tight end heavy personnel sets. You run a lot of 13 personnel. You can run different blocking schemes where you're throwing double teams and then you're switching. Trying to create lanes for the quarterback to be able to step up, which Brees might be the best. He's definitely the best in the league right now. He might be ever as far as footwork and navigating the pocket. And then the other thing is getting the ball out quickly. They throw a lot of quick, short passes. They attack the intermediate parts of the field. And they're not taking as many deep shots against the better fronts that they've played as they are against when they have solid protection. That's really when you see a player like Brandon Cooks or the guys who can move down the field really get unleashed. So there's definitely some schematic things they can do to make the offensive line's numbers from a statistical standpoint exceed what their real ability is. And so that was really more what I was referring to. But it's not a bad unit. And we as Saints fans and writers were terrified that this unit was going to get Drew Brees like assassinated going into the season. So it's been a very pleasant surprise for us.
Well, I did want to talk about one other thing that does come from Drew Brees, just in kind of another matchup. And that's in regard to, I mean, he's had an unbelievable year. Once again, he's going to be 38. I don't understand how he does it. He probably keeps himself alive by making just god awful motorcycle commercials. But
they're terrible.
They're awful. They're awful. And the jeans commercials too. He's so bad at this, but you know, he gets paid, I guess. But I want to talk about one thing that did stand out. So obviously he's had 30 touchdown passes, but he's also had 8 interceptions, 3 of those coming in the last 3 weeks, and 2 of those in a game against Denver. Obviously that's Denver, but the Lions do have Darius Slay back. Darius Slay did make his signature big play against, obviously, Sam Bradford. It was Sam Bradford still. But, I mean, what I don't know how much you know about Darius Slay, but, like, what's kind of the... Do the Saints have that kind of flexibility that if Slay is just following around the number one receiver, Drew Brees is not going to be hampered? Well, he will obviously have other weapons, but, you know, I'm just kind of envisioning what happens if Slay is just set on... I don't know. Michael Thomas is kind of the guy I know because I have him in fantasy, but just what do you take on that?
It's between Michael Thomas and Cooks. They're kind of a 1A, 1B situation as far as the top receiver. I'll put it to you like this. The Rams ran bracket coverage over to Cooks all game long last week, and at times literally had him triple covered. And the Saints put up 555 yards and 49 points on the number two scoring defense, number five overall defense in the league at home. Earlier this year, Brandon Cooks, when left one-on-one, has burned, he actually burned Richard Sherman on multiple routes, just didn't get the ball. He's burned Sean Smith over in Oakland, who was considered a top corner. The problem with Cooks is he has borderline 4.2 speed and he runs a complete route tree. So Slay is phenomenal and he absolutely has the ability to be able to shut down a single receiver. But if he doesn't get safety help over the top, the odds of Cooks breaking free at least once or twice are there. And as we all know, a 60-yard touchdown can make a corner who hadn't otherwise had a fantastic day look bad. And that's the element he brings. And on the other side, you have Michael Thomas, who is, if it wasn't for Zeke down in Dallas, I think he'd be the offensive rookie of the year right now. He's Keyshawn Johnson's nephew. He's a crisp route runner. He's got, you know, just tremendous technique, incredibly strong hands, and a little bit of that Steve Smith nasty streak in him. Really fights for extra yardage. So I'm not sure which of those two players the Lions are going to put Slay on. Personally, I would put it on Michael Thomas because I think they have a better chance of him shutting him down than Cooks, just because with Cooks' speed, unless there's a safety there at some point, he's going to get beat.
Well, I wanted to bring that to Ryan because, Ryan, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm just thinking about the last few games the Lions have played, about the last four. They really, outside of like Stephon Diggs, who obviously they missed in the second game, they have not, and obviously didn't have Slay against Stephon Diggs either. But they haven't against like the Jaguars and the Diggsless Vikings round two. They haven't really had to really face deep threats that much. And certainly not from a good quarterback either.
No, not particularly, no. And those offenses in general are just kind of weak, right? You know, they haven't faced a quarterback like Drew Brees besides Aaron Rodgers and early in the season.
Maybe Kirk Cousins, I guess. Maybe, yeah. But they have more. No, they have
I don't
more,
know about
they have
that.
A more balanced,
don't insult
more
my
balanced,
quarterback, man.
They have a more balanced offense, right in Washington.
Sure. Yeah. Well, jumping off from that, let's talk about, because Drew Brees is obviously all world. One of his targets, and you talked about how the Saints are using some tight end heavy formations. If you haven't met the Lions defense, they like making opposing tight ends look like they
look really
are
good.
Rob Gronkowski version 2.0. How big of a disappointment has Kobe Fleener been this year?
Honestly?
Yeah.
Partially because I don't, I don't see the world in a fantasy centric viewpoint as some fans, both not of the team and of the team in general, do.
Sure.
I actually don't think Kobe Fleener has been a disappointment. There have been some games where teams have schemed him away and he's opened things up for them. There have been other games where I go back and I watch the film and Fleener's open, which is, at the end of the day, a player should be graded on, are you getting open, more than they should be graded on just the stats, because if the quarterback didn't throw you the ball, you never had a chance to make a play. And that's where some of the pass protection issues I've mentioned before come into play. They brought Fleener in to work a lot of the seam routes that they used to run Jimmy Graham on. Yeah. The problem is they don't have the offensive line they had when they had Jimmy Graham there, and those routes take time. So Fleener's open, but Drew's having to get rid of the ball in 2.5, 2.6 seconds, which means that he either has to throw a perfect ball and drop it into Fleener, which he's capable of, or it can hit Willie Snead, who's wide open in the flat, or Mark Ingram, who's open on a screen. And the thing with Drew is he consistently will go to the open man more than just trying to fill something like a fantasy thing like that. So I wish Fleener had more production, but the reasons why he isn't having production outside of the game against the New York Giants, where he had eight drops, It's not something I put on him as much as I do on the circumstance.
All right, we're kind of getting up against it, but before we get to the things we know, I mean, we've talked this entire time about New Orleans offense, but I mean, I think I said this to Chris when we were doing the five questions. It's like a bad love song. We'd never talk about New Orleans defense. And obviously, this was probably one of the worst defenses in the league last year. Who just, I mean,
they set an NFL record for bad.
Yeah, NFL record for bad. And still, by DVOA numbers, they're ranked 22nd right now overall. That's 6.5%. Pass defense is good for 25th in the league. So, I mean, but at the same time, Ryan, we've seen this offense have its start and stops because of how plays are generally steamed up and how they're being called out there, that sometimes we've just seen some baffling things, like why would you, you know, you're just on how the runs are called, on how certain passes are called. I mean, I'm not downing Jim Bob Cooter, but it kind of makes me scratching my head. So I guess I'm trying to figure out how this offense is going to go against the Saints.
Yeah, well, you know, I guess there are a couple of matchups that I'm just really quickly interested in learning about, because we need to check in on our boy Nick Fairley. I mean, I was a big fan of Fairley when he was in Detroit. He had some injuries, had some problems with kind of just conditioning and whatnot, because he is a big man. He's a big man, but I love big men.
He's our large adult son.
He is, and it looks like he's been having a pretty good season. When I've had a chance to see some Saints games, he looks like he's been a big disruptor. How has Nick Fairley played for you guys this season?
He's been fantastic.
Yeah, I believe it.
I think he's got 4.5 sacks on the season. He's consistently applied pressure. He's got some tackles for loss. He's drawn double teams at times, which has allowed our first round pick, who's finally healthy. I promise you, the injuries, they're never an excuse, but they are part of why some of those defensive numbers, the first 6 or 7 weeks, are so different than they have been the last 4 or 5 weeks. Fairley has been, I actually wrote an article recently asking for the Saints to please sign him now, because if he gets up to 8 or 9 sacks on the season, it's going to be a lot bigger number than what he has now, and it's looking like he might hit that. He's really been a welcome addition to the team, in the locker room and on the field.
All right, well, let's go on to things we think we know. As you know, we do not do predictions on this show. Predictions are for suckers, and picks are for myself. And I bombed out on the NFL picks against the spread this week, so we're going to ignore all of that. Instead, what we're going to do is talk about things we think are going to happen, at least one thing, and it'll give Brian and Ryan both time here. So let's start with Brian. What do you think we'll know? You know, this is a tongue twister. What's the thing you think will happen?
Who's going first?
Brian, with a B.
See, we said right, this would be confusing, and it finally popped. It finally reared its ugly head at the end of the episode. We almost made it the whole way through.
We did pretty good. One thing I know, the Lions will have to outscore the Saints.
Thanks, Madden. Thanks, John.
Well, I mean that score with in all caps. I don't see any way New Orleans scores less than 30 points unless Drew throws 4 picks.
Yeah, I mean, this could have the makings, if these two go on, probably of the Lions-Colts game that started the season, which was like the last time the Lions really put up just crazy numbers. But Ryan, how do you see this playing out?
Well, there was a little stat that I found as I was doing a little bit of research for my fantasy article. Don't kill me on this. Just because it's fantasy football doesn't mean I have to love it. But as I was doing a little bit of digging, I stumbled upon a stat that let me know that the Saints are 25th in the league in terms of yards after catch that they allow. Asking Brian for a quick little bit of information, do the Saints struggle with their tackling?
It's actually less that they struggle with their tackling and more of the ability to put speed to the ball. If I was going to tell you one thing that the Lions can do to guarantee offensive success against the Saints, it's attack the edges. If you try to go up the middle, you're going to get stopped. If you get, for example, Golden Tate, who's caused nightmares for Saints fans in the past, you get him out on the edges and let him get out in open space, and he can create major problems for the Saints. They just don't have the speed out there for him.
Okay, I can say this one with 100% 100%. Like, I feel so good about this now. Thank you very much, Brian. So, Golden Tate is third in the NFL in yak, and Theo Riddick is seventh in the league in yak. I think that if the Saints are really weak on the outside, if you can get to the edge and you can get to the edge with speed, you can utilize that speed, because Lions fans, we all know that there is no chance that this team will ever be able to run between Taylor Decker and Riley Reiff. It just isn't going to happen. They'll try, and they'll try mightily, but they will fail. They will fail you. But I think that I know that the Lions will get the ball to Golden Tate. They'll get the ball to Theo Riddick. And I think that you're going to see both those guys have very big games against the Saints. I would agree with Brian, though. The only way that the Lions are going to win, though, is if they outscore the Saints.
I believe that, too. All right, Brian, thank you for joining us. Where can people find you?
You can find me on CanalStreetChronicles.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Kirus16. That's KIRUS16. I write for a couple of other Saints-related blogs as well. I'm always willing to talk sports or, you know, pretty much any other subject as well.
All right, that sounds good.
I have one last thing. So earlier you said, you know, that ladder match was pretty good. Are you talking about SummerSlam 95 or are you talking about WrestleMania 10?
Oh, for the love of God.
I'm talking about the match where Shawn Michaels had a match with a ladder.
Ah.
That would be WrestleMania.
Jeremy's going to shut us down, but let's get out of here. All right. So Ryan Matthews at Ryan_POD and myself, Chris Lemieux at Detroit Southern. Have a good Sunday, everyone. And we will see you next time earlier in the week for a podcast.
Hear the drums echoing tonight, and she hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way, hoping to find some old forgotten words. Melodies. He turned to me as if to say,